This is Jim Alger.
And this is Jen C. Spradlin.
And this is Common Sense.
Oh, say, can you see?
Change will not come if we wait for some other person.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Or if we wait for some other time.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
We are the ones we've been waiting for.
Why do the Republicans hate America?
Their only play right now in Congress is to hope the Democratic Party fails.
The airport experience is an abomination, and the airlines, for example, have capitalized on our fear and on our worries.
America comes in 37th in terms of the quality of care and its affordability.
I can't afford health care, you know, as it stands.
I just want to say Congressman King is an idiot.
It's not even us in the U.S. It's us in China now.
It's us in China.
It's going to be us in
Russia and China.
It's the EU.
I don't know why in the world we would have anybody like this as a congressman to make such a blatant, idiotic statement.
Oh, please, Mayor Antonio, please shut up. Don't say anything. Just keep quiet.
The insurance industry has been accused of running a shadow campaign here, pretending to cooperate on one hand and yet funding the kind of accusations that we hear coming up in the mainstream media while disavowing and washing their hands of it.
We are in the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
The buzzword of the day is not torture. The buzzword of the day is enhanced interrogation techniques.
Can we just agree to call it torture?
(415) 762-1161 is our phone number for this very special edition of Common Sense. And you might ask yourself, why is it a special edition? And that is because this is our last show before we go on break for about 3 months. So we get to take some time off here. I have to get some issues taken care of medically. I get to get my back worked on and get some things done. And we get to have a break. Jency is off taking her break right now, trying to get her microphone fixed, so she'll be with us shortly. Joining me on the phone today is a guest who's been on the show a few times before, C. Ellen Thompson. C. Ellen, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Jim. Good to be back.
Oh, good to have you back. You're going to be joining us for the entire hour today. And, of course, Jency will come in when she gets herself situated there. The first thing that I want to talk about today, because I've been just raring to go, this has got to be Jency coming in now because
can
no
you,
one
can
else
you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. We're live on the air. How are you, Jency? Welcome to joining
us. I'm good.
Us.
I'm good. I didn't know if it was sounding like I was coming through the other.
You are coming through the speakers, but you're here. What I wanted to talk about right off the bat today, because this is an issue that's been getting on my nerves, and that is that, you know, I know a political hit when I see one, and Toyota has been engaging in a political hit job the past couple days like I haven't seen in a while, and it was a relatively effective one. Jency, the only problem with your microphone being on the computer is that every time you touch the keyboard, we can hear you. It was a relatively expensive one, a relatively successful one, in that what they've been doing is they've been going after the driver who reported that his Prius was running away on him. And that they haven't flat out called him a liar, but they've walked right up to the line and stared at it. They said, we could not reproduce this issue. And this guy has got a bad website, and this guy's filed bankruptcy, and he's got financial issues. And it's been really some pretty hefty attacks on the guy. And to me, the problem that I have with this is, one, they could hardly reproduce this thing. My understanding is they could not reproduce this issue in any car that they've had. They came up with the idea that, well, it must be the floor mats. But this whole thing started when an off-duty California Highway Patrol officer was killed in a runaway Lexus, which is built by Toyota. And the family had called 911, and the whole crash took place on the 911 tape. The Now, Toyota was starting to get some ground, although I don't know if you guys have been following the AP today, but there is now a runaway Prius in New York. I'm wondering what this is going to do to their little process here. See, Alan, any comments?
What this sounds like is a typical case of a corporation trying to blame the victim. And, you know, this guy, okay, so he's had problems, he had bankruptcies. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's making this whole thing up to file a lawsuit against Toyota. And if this is a problem that's happening again and again, I guess my only input on this is that the corporation itself needs to admit that there are problems. It needs to address these problems, and it certainly needs to clear them up. Because I'll tell you, if I were driving down the freeway and I couldn't get my gas to quit going, I'd be scared for my life. And I'd hate to have that happen to anybody.
Well, here's the problem that I have, and that is that when the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration was sat next to Toyota when they were doing this, when they were doing the tests on this car, said that they agree they couldn't get the car to duplicate the problem. But at the same time, they acknowledged they had to replace the brake pads and rotors because they were burned out. The California Highway Patrol officer who was responding to this vehicle that was allegedly running out of control claimed that he personally witnessed the brakes burning before his very eyes. He could smell it. And he witnessed from his patrol car the driver pouncing on the brakes, the car not stopping. According to Toyota, that's not possible. According to Toyota, once you step on the brake of the vehicle, it disengages the engine on a Prius. And I can tell you, my first-hand experience of the Prius is that's the way it's supposed to work. The only thing I would emphasize at Toyota here is that's the definition of a computer glitch, is when the computer is supposed to do something and it doesn't happen. But I understand why Toyota is scrambling to try and save its flagship here. I mean, the Prius is their pride and joy. But the fact of the matter is, this gentleman in San Diego is not the first Prius to have a problem. Doesn't appear he's going to be the last. Is it possible that all of these are driver error? Of course, it's possible. But that's not what they're implying. They're implying an elaborate hoax. And there's just too many of these problems across the country. And I'm having some issues with it, especially when I forgot the gentleman's name now, but the co-founder of Apple Computer. Who has a whole bunch of these cars, said that he's been saying there's been a software glitch in these cars for a while. Excuse me?
Steve Wozniak.
Steve Wozniak. He's been saying these things have been having a software glitch for a while. So the point I'm getting at is that the Toyota, you know, the rapid response team, well, not so rapid, but quick response team, seemed to very quickly say this was an issue with this individual and not with the vehicle. And of course, they put on the dog and pony show of putting a bunch of Priuses out there so the media can film it. And they speed up and slam their foot on the brakes in the parking lot, and voila, they all stop. Well, no kidding. Most of these cars do stop. I mean, give me a break. If you get into a Ford Explorer and turn, it's not going to flip over right away. But we had a big problem with those tires several years ago. So, I mean, it seems to me like – I mean, this is a political hit job. Someone with the communications crisis management team or with crisis management experience came in and said, we need to save our bacon. And what are we going to do? And they suddenly decided – to target this guy. And my concern is that it's going to have a squelching effect on other people who may be having the same problem. They may not want to call the NHTSA. They may not want to call Toyota. They may be afraid they're going to be the next ones targeted by this multi-billion dollar corporation on a personal mission of destruction. Am I wrong?
No, you're dead on there.
It may be distasteful to see that happening, but if they didn't do a little bit of vetting of the people that were making public comments before just assuming everything it, you know, was at face value, then they're not protecting their shareholders. They're not.
But one has nothing to do with the other. That's my problem. If a prostitute witnesses a murder, the fact that she's a prostitute has nothing to do with whether or not her eyes work. So that is my problem.
I don't mean make character assassinations. I'm just saying, you know, that if they're going to look in, this just sounds like an episode of Law and Order or one of my favorite shows, The Good Wife. You know, her law firm, they'd be all over that.
The point that I'm getting at is it is character assassination. We now know this guy ran a apparently a dirty website. We now know that this guy filed bankruptcy. We now know this guy was in debt several years ago. Who cares? I don't give a damn.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with whether or not his Prius was broken.
Right. No, I agree.
So it means nothing to me. Look, I've orchestrated political hits before. I know one when I see it. And that's what this is. I don't want to stay on the Toyota issue for too much longer, but I do want to share an experience that I had with Toyota. And this is not going to make them happy. We now own a shiny, brand new 2010 Honda Insight, specifically because of what Toyota's service department did. I brought them a car a few years ago, a 2008 Prius, that had a cracked screen on it. And we tried to get them to – the screen was not working, actually. I think – I'm not sure if it was cracked or not. But in any event, the screen wasn't working, the nav screen. And we asked them to fix it under warranty. And they wouldn't. And then we said, well, how much is this thing to repair? And they wanted an excess of $4,000 to fix it. Make a long story short, and they told us there's no way you could use any other part. You had to go through them. You couldn't do anything else. Make a long story short, I found the part on eBay for $400, had it installed for $75, and for $475, the car was working just fine. A few weeks ago, brought in a 2001 Prius to them. That basically lit up like a Christmas tree. All the warning lights came on the dashboard out of nowhere. And they informed us that it was the AC inverter that went, which is the big thing that runs the whole hybrid system. And in order to replace this, it was going to be, by the time they were all said and done, the better part of $5,000. And the... When I went and I looked at the part online, I found out that this part rebuilt is readily available for $700, and installed it takes about 2 hours. So for under $1,000, this vehicle could have been fixed. Now, that's twice on two separate occasions when I was told I had no other options but to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars with Toyota. And in both cases, in this last case, they basically told me the car was totaled because it needed so much work, it wasn't worth much more than that. And so what we ended up doing was just selling the car for $1,000 and then went down and picked up a brand new shiny Toyota Prius. Honda Insight. That's my experience with Toyota. Now, it may not be everyone's experience. It just kind of plugged. Now, granted, you know, and I know just saying that I bought a Honda Insight, this doesn't quite fit, but I do, enjoy to a degree that, I would like to see, what does this say? More people purchase American cars. I'd like to see more American cars be affordable. I looked at the Ford Fusion, and it cost so freaking much money, so much significantly more money, actually, upwards of $30,000, that I just simply could not justify it. I do want to shift gears a little bit off of the Toyota thing and on to some comments that were made by Attorney General Eric Holder today. And, Jency, I'm curious to know what you think of this. And that is that the Attorney General has told Congress today that Osama bin Laden will never face trial in the United States because he will not be captured alive.
So the Attorney General said that today?
Yeah, a few hours ago.
Why would he even say that? I mean, I agree that I'd prefer him caught dead, and I assume
wouldn't.
That he would not be. Well, I'm just saying, in all likelihood, he's going to be caught. He's not going to be caught. He's going to be killed. But I don't know what the point of voicing that publicly is.
Well, it was voicing it to Congress, but it did seem.
I mean, what's the point of even saying that to Congress?
They were asking him questions about it, and the GOP, of course, the GOP this time around, now that Obama's in office, thinks it's too dangerous to try terror suspects in a civilian court. So now
this is his way of just saying, look, chill out. You don't have to worry about this process because if we get bin Laden, he isn't going to be caught alive anyway. So just don't get your panties in a wad.
Well, that's the thing is everything. And I want to shift over to healthcare and see what you and CL have to say about the healthcare mess. But and this is a great segue right into it. And that is that everything is political these days. It's no longer about what's reality. It's just all about what can we spin into the next thing. I mean, I was watching – now, granted, this is a bad example. But the show that's on before me over on the BBS network is called The People Speak. And their theme song, their closeout song, is This Land Is Your Land. Glenn Beck – identified that song last week as part of some communist plot.
What?
I'm not even. You can't make this stuff up.
And
what he was talking about was, I guess there's a verse in the song that says that I saw a sign, and on one side it said no trespassing, on the other side there was nothing. That side is made for you and me. And he took that and transposed that to mean, you're not entitled to property rights.
I don't know that I sang that verse in elementary school. I'm trying to sing it in my head right now, and I don't know.
Glenn Beck's an idiot, and I don't want to, you know, he's got fair enough. But I think that the politics is being played, and this is where I want both of you guys to give me some feedback here. I believe that all this nonsense about the reconciliation bill is, pardon my French, bullshit. Utter, unadulterated bullshit. And they can bleep me till the cows come home. It's bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. And I'll tell you why. Does the idea that they have to pass this bill through the House of Representatives, and then the senators, the Republican senators, are not going to vote for the reconciliation bill is crap. Because the argument they're using against the House is that if you vote for this bill, you are going to be voting for the Cornhusker kickback, which is the payoff to North Dakota. That you're going to be voting for the Louisiana Purchase, which is a payoff to Louisiana. You're going to be voting for all these bad things, and the Democrats are trying to pull out of the bill through reconciliation. Here's the problem with that scenario. Democrats, listen up, you cowards. If the reconciliation bill comes to the Senate and the Republicans vote against you, they own the Cornhusker kickback and the Louisiana Purchase. You can hit them with it. This idea that they can't vote for reconciliation is crap. I guarantee you they're going to have no choice but to vote for it. So if the Democrats in the House can snoop around and find a pair and pass this thing, the reconciliation will happen, mark my words, without an issue. Because the Republicans dare not vote. Can you imagine the GOP voting against a bill to remove the Cornhusker kickback?
But don't you think the whole process is just shady? I mean, I just think having to go that route on something so important and so affecting of every single man, woman, child, and unborn child that is yet to be born, which is why it's called an unborn child, Einstein.
I appreciate your clarification. I wasn't sure.
I know you weren't. But I just think that the whole way they're going about doing it is not – I don't like it. I think it's deplorable. And it may be a rule, but just because you can doesn't mean you should.
What are you talking about? What specifically are you upset with?
Well, I'm upset with the fact that the House might do this whole slaughter rule or whatever. You know,
all the deemed as.
Yeah, yeah.
They've done that before.
Well, not on something like this that's so big.
But don't you understand what's going on? The fact that the Republican Party is saying, if you vote for that bill, we know damn well that you don't want these other parts, but we're going to tell everyone you voted for it anyway, which is what's making these guys afraid in the first place. The fact that the Republican Party is playing the politics with this is what's making all of this happen. Now, frankly, the Democrats are cowards. They always have been.
Right.
They're so damn worried about their own jobs. And here's the kicker, though. Why are they worried about their jobs? Because the American people are morons. That's why. Because we support health care reform. So they shouldn't be concerned about their jobs because it should be no problem. They're going to get reelected because they're doing what we want. But no, some jackass screams socialism. Everyone sets their hair on fire and forgets that they elected a president of the Democratic Congress on the platform of passing health reform in the first damn place. So it all comes back to us. Nobody wants to say that. You want to point at Washington when the Democrats pointed at Washington a few years ago and said there were things wrong. We were accused of blame America first. Why do you guys hate America? You're unpatriotic. But now the GOP can do it. Of course, I think it's hilarious watching John Boehner rail against Washington politics, considering that he embodies it. But hypocrisy does not matter. See, Ellen, jump in here. Am I insane or...
What I wonder is the jackass who stands up and screams socialism, where was this guy when we deprivatized the fire departments, when we deprivatized the police? Where was this guy? Was there a Republican Party out there blocking this from happening? Well, no, because the Democrats have a majority at the time. Now, people are so afraid of socialism right now, and I got to wonder why. Don't they enjoy being able to call 911? I certainly do. You know, this healthcare reform, there needs to be a public option. There needs to be reconciliation. You know, this Congress that's acting like a group of 12-year-olds, this can't keep going on. That's my two cents on it.
Well, passing it with this rule that says that if they pass this other thing, it's deemed to have passed. If that's the rules they make, that's the rules they make. I mean, Jency, you're all upset about it, but here's the reality. What do you care? If at the end of the day they find a way to pass this thing, which is what they're trying to do in the first place, why do you care? They're not subverting the people. They're doing all this out in the open. It could not be any more transparent.
It doesn't get any more transparent either than an administration who did something completely unprecedented and had a debate with congressmen on live television. And since we're using a little bit of French here, I mean, President Obama handed the Republicans' asses right back to him with every single argument that they put in front of him. And John McCain was right on there on television completely acting like a 12-year-old who's still angry about losing the election. I mean, this needs to happen. And, you know, if it was an unfair tactic, as some people seem to think, the way that Congress did it, the way I see it, the ends justify the means. If we have reconciliation out of this, who cares?
I generally don't support the ends justifies the means argument. However, the Republican Party rammed everything through and didn't give a damn what the Democrats had to say when they were in power. So at
and
this
where
point,
are those balls from the Democrats?
Well, we don't have them. I mean, that's the reality is I'm embarrassed with my party because the lack of – and I'm the farthest thing in the world from a lefty. I mean, I get accused of it by my Republican friends, but by my Democratic friends, they say that I'm a conservative. And yet I tend to think that I'm kind of down the middle. But this notion that, you know, there's some kind of subversion going on here is crazy. When I hear Dennis Kucinich talk about, well, I'm going to vote against the bill because it doesn't go far enough, which is a really important point. A lot of the people that don't support the bill, they don't know what's in it, but B, they don't think it goes far enough. And to me, that is a serious issue because that would actually be supportive of the bill. I mean, you know, that means that they actually support healthcare reform. So I think that we should, you know, get this out there, but the Republicans don't care. Facts don't matter to them. They just want to kill this because they believe, you know, I'll even say that a percentage of them honestly believe that this is a bad thing for the country. I'll give them more credit than they give us. But you can't tell me that 100% of Republicans oppose this because they believe it's bad for the country. In fact, some of them, there's things in here that they used to support. So what you have is that what they claimed a long time ago, that this is Barack Obama's Waterloo, that they feel they could take down the president. And I'm telling you, they're probably right. Because if the Democrats can't get this through this week, and healthcare dies, and it sounds like it's going to live or die this week, if they can't get it through, then I don't see how the base is, you know, feels good enough to come out in November. I think that they're going to just feel very – go ahead.
Oh, it'll leave the field right open for the – because you know the right-wing attack this coming November is going to be what change. And if the Democrats can't do this, that leaves them wide open because people don't pay attention to things like the 25 tax breaks that we got this year or anything else that's happened. They're paying attention to what the media pays attention to. And if this doesn't happen, they're going to run on that platform of what change, and they're going to win. This is my greatest fear come to life. The Republicans taking back the House only 2 years after they defaced it.
I'm with you. I hope that that's not what happens.
I hope so, but I try to be a realist whenever possible, and I foresee it happening if this healthcare thing doesn't happen.
Well, if the healthcare thing doesn't happen, I don't see how. At that point, I think the House comes into play. Right now, I don't think there's really a serious threat of the Democrats losing the House, and certainly not the Senate. I mean, there's a lot of talk, you know, on the talking heads on TV try to fervor things up. These are the same exact people that said that Hillary Clinton was still in the race and that John McCain was a serious contender. The reality is the polls never showed either one of those two things to be true. You know, after Super Tuesday, everyone with a brain knew that Hillary Clinton lost the race. After, you know, John McCain polled ahead of Barack Obama for 10 days out of the entire campaign. And that was right after the convention with Sarah Palin's speech. And that was it. There was, and every time Barack Obama speaks, his ratings soar. So it's I don't see a path in which the Democrats lose the House unless they totally screw the pooch and mess up on this health reform, and that could affect the president as well, because right now the president's numbers are pretty close to split. The latest Gallup Daily poll shows the president at 48% approval and with 44% disapproval. Now, those numbers will move around a little bit. And, of course, now here's my problem for my Republican friends, and that is that the president seems to have found his floor. And what I mean by that is it doesn't appear, barring him doing something incredibly stupid, that he could sink a whole lot lower. He might tick down a couple of points, but you're not going to see George Bush numbers out of this guy. And a 48% or better president, granted you'd want to be over 50, but a 48% or better president gets reelected. 46, you're starting to get yourself into trouble. There might be something. But remember, Barack Obama's got a lot of money from his last campaign. He's fundraising all the time. And he's going to be able to put forward a pretty strong campaign. And once again, I remind you that once he starts talking, people like him. The problem he's going to have.
I could be wrong on this, Jim.
Yes.
I get a sense that a lot of people view Obama as separate from, you know, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, Congress. I mean, Congress's approval numbers are so incredibly low.
Yeah, but that's a red herring.
Voters, think differently about Obama than necessarily the other people in his party, because his message has been a little
bit
different.
But I disagree, and let me clarify that. We always hear, regardless of what the administration is, Congress's numbers are low. Well, no kidding. I mean, Congress is dysfunctional, and I said this on Facebook the other day. And that is that when people say they want to throw the bums out, they want to throw your bum out, not their own. So, you know, members of Congress, that's why members of Congress always get reelected. It's because they like their congressman, they just think yours sucks. Well, here's the thing. Your congressman, listen up, ladies and gentlemen. If it's not your congressman, he's not elected to represent you. He's elected to represent someone else. You don't have to like him. It doesn't matter. So that's why when you look at the numbers of what congressmen are doing and you look at the Congress as a whole, first of all, trying to get anything done through a committee is always a pain in the butt. But, you know, there's something to be said for dictatorship. When you have one person at the top to make a decision and say, we're going to make this so. We don't live in a
dictatorship. Oh, come on. You can't be advocating dictatorship.
Wow. did I say I was advocating dictatorship?
No, I mean, you can't even say that. Something to be said for a dictatorship.
I'm a little bit
late to the party this week because of daylight, because you guys changed to daylight savings and we didn't.
Blah, blah, blah. You and your excuses. Listen. Parenting is a dictatorship. My son says, no, I get him. That means yes. There is no, oh, we're going to send this thing off to committee and 15 people. As soon as you throw it to a bunch of people to decide, I don't care if it's the school PTA or a city council or Congress. The more people you throw in the mix, the less likely anything is to get done.
Well,
does anybody want to say I'm wrong?
But your problem isn't exclusive to the United States. It's the same all over the world.
I didn't say it was. That's human nature. That's my point. My point is there is something to be said for dictatorship in that the one person has a say, and that's it. When it goes one way or the other, whether you like it or not. As soon as you start making it a conference of people, things get slowed down. Congress is the ultimate conference of people, with hundreds of people, all with their own individual wants, needs, desires, and angles, trying to
mention the interests of their, not to mention the interests of their corporate masters going into that.
I thought you were going to say the interests of their constituents, which I had deliberately left out.
Oh.
But you know what? We should talk about the interests of their corporate masters. I think that it's either Jency or Natalie, who was not properly introduced because she just decided to start screaming at me out of the clear blue sky and basically called me a Stalinist. But the one of you two have a horse over that likes to type. Because you're thumping around on the keyboard.
Well, it isn't me for a change.
Sorry for trying to scoop out some additional news.
No. I like having you at a disadvantage. It's fun.
My mic wouldn't work, and now I'm having to go old school, and now you won't let me type.
Okay. See, there's something to be said for dictatorship. But, you know, now I want to, something else that happened today real quick, and that was that Rush Limbaugh gave out the Capitol phone number on his radio show, and basically it just about shut down the phone lines to the Capitol today, which is kind of hilarious.
You mean the Capitol as in the building or the city?
The building.
Now, I was listening to him today, and maybe I had already moved on to something else. What? Did you say something negative about me that I missed? Okay. Anyway. So I was listening to him, and he was talking about how nobody could get through to the switchboard. And that when they called into the switchboard, they were getting a recording or something saying to call the technical group or, you know, that deals with that sort of thing. I don't know. But I think it was him at the time, or maybe it was Hannity. I'm not sure. They all wrote together, who was saying, well, I'm not going to give that number out on the phone line. I mean, on the radio. But, I mean, he gave out the Capitol switchboard number, but... I mean, that's public knowledge.
Well, yeah, and the whole thing is, you know, we have to keep this in perspective. And for those of you who may think that I'm eating, you're right. Some little drug dealer showed up. I almost had this monkey off my back. But then some little 12-year-old drug dealer in pigtails showed up with a crate of Girl Scout Thin Mints. And I have my weaknesses.
Man.
So I am, like, going through, I don't know, I think there's a dozen or two dozen boxes in there, however many's in a case.
You bought a case of Girl Scout cookies?
I couldn't. I'm telling you, I almost had this monkey off my back. And then, you know, it's just, what are you going to do? I have my weaknesses. That there's something to be said. There's something to be said for a guy who'd rather eat Thin Mints in a state where pot's legal. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but it technically isn't legal because it's still like a federal law.
Blah, blah, blah.
Come on, federal law supersedes state law.
Yeah. Which is why they.
It's like that. European law supersedes UK law. It's common sense. The higher the power, the higher the law, it supersedes it. So it's technically not legal.
Take me down the bunny trail. I really don't care about.
I'm just disagreeing with your statement.
Okay. Well, the point that I was getting at, and why the listeners should be, I implore you guys to really listen to this, and that is that remember, I forgot what the exact percentage is, but it was like 46% of the people didn't vote for Barack Obama in the first place. And a high percentage of those people, we're talking about millions of people here, vehemently oppose him. If they all picked up the phone and called Congress to oppose something, they're going to do that. It doesn't mean the people are against the health care bill or anything else for that matter. It just means the opposition has remained steadfast and is motivated to do something. And when you have hate mongers like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck out there stirring the pot of disinformation, then they're gonna be afraid. I mean, if I told people something completely ridiculous and says, "Oh my God, you know, we had fun with them earlier today, so I'll throw them under the bus. Call Toyota and tell them to stop supporting pedophiles." You'd go, "What? Yeah, let me call them quick."
And then my mother, if she heard that, would summarily send an email out to all of my entire cousins and aunts and uncles, and it would be repeated and forwarded to infinity.
Yeah, when you hear
the next thing you know, it would show up in Google searches. And it's all about the fact that the squeakiest the wheel gets the oil. But personally, I don't think listeners of Rush Limbaugh should be legally allowed to use a telephone or a computer, so that's just my opinion.
Unfortunately, I don't think you can legally stop Rush Limbaugh's listeners from using a telephone.
No, but it would be nice.
I wish you could legally stop Rush Limbaugh from opening his mouth, but...
No, I don't. And I'll tell you, I honestly don't. I don't view Limbaugh as that big of a force. I view him as an aggravation. What... Glenn Beck is dangerous. Rush Limbaugh and Sean
This morning, Glenn Beck was going on about... And he sounds like a minister. And I just
I have to turn it off,
because it's so dire. I mean... Rush doesn't make you want to jump off a bridge with your family tied to you because living seems like it's going to be so terrible. Who wants to, you know, even breathe another breath in this world?
But Rush did say he's going to leave the country if health care passes, and if that's not motivation for you Democrats, nothing is. Wow, I just
spoke
with Ted Kennedy right there.
And going back to that.
As long as Rush Limbaugh doesn't come here, I don't care.
But he will. He will. He'll
he
go
said he was
going
to go to Costa
Kingdom.
Rica, which has socialized tennis. I mean, when he stood in Hawaii and said that you know, Hawaii's got the best healthcare system in the world. You do know they have an employer mandate to provide health insurance to all their workers, right? You just sit back and you go, wow.
Rush Limbaugh's researchers even check their facts?
Thing is, facts don't matter. When you are an ideologue on the left or the right, facts don't matter. You pick and choose your facts. And you make the argument, and you can contradict yourself the following week. It really doesn't matter. Glenn Beck is on video. You can find this on YouTube, talking about how horrible the healthcare system was a year and a half ago.
Until he got a job with Fox News.
Yes.
Out of all these people, I think Sean Hannity is probably the worst.
Well, Sean Hannity is just filled with hate. I mean, Sean Hannity.
I can't stand the guy. I can't stand the guy, and I can't. The reason why I can't stand him is he had one of our politicians on the show slamming the NHS, and I just think, what he made. I mean, we talked about this when we did the healthcare specials about they made it seem like bodies were piling up in the streets in London. And
actually,
you know
they
what?
Said that bodies were piling up in the streets of London.
You know what?
Literally.
It confused London with New Orleans, but anyway.
I will say one thing to the Democratic Party. Please pass the health care bill, because I've been living with socialized medicine my whole life, and I am perfectly healthy.
Okay, here's the problem that I have with that. You just said it on my show. There's no way to compare the health care bill that's being proposed by either the Senate or the House as socialized medicine. It's not.
It's affordable health care. I never said that the health care bill was socialized medicine. I said I've been living with socialized medicine.
You
I'm not.
feed into the
I never said that the healthcare bill was socialized medicine. I said I've been living with socialized medicine my entire life. I personally am unemployed. Being unemployed does not mean that I cannot afford a doctor. Being unemployed doesn't have to mean...
It means that someone else is paying for it.
It means that I've already paid for it when I was employed.
Until you get a major disease like cancer or something. This is the problem with the Republican Party. They do not believe, ironically calling themselves Christians at the same time, they do not believe that caring for their fellow man is their responsibility. They believe that if you're not employed, you're a lazy bum.
No, that's wrong.
Wrong.
They do care. They just view it as their personal responsibility and not the government's responsibility.
That is such a dog whistle. Personal responsibility to who?
For these indigent people. However, a lot of times I get uncomfortable with that because, you know, then followed after that statement is, but if a man won't work, he won't eat. And I'm like, well, then he's screwed all the way around, I suppose.
Well, call me a socialist or a communist if you want. I happen to feel that the collective health of everybody is everybody's responsibility. We need to be more like we were in various stages of evolution where we really came together as packs. We need to care for the collective majority as a whole. And the Republicans do not see things that way. They see that as socialism. They see that as Stalinism. And we can't have that. I've lived in Minnesota
really
my entire life.
Socialism is a bad thing.
What's that?
I said the issue really is not whether or not something is socialism. The issue is whether or not that's a bad thing.
Exactly.
And we don't think socialism is a bad thing when it comes to police, fire, the military, roads, electricity, communication service. We don't and everyone, and I know what they're going to say. Oh, that's private industry. Really? No, it's not. I mean, it was the government that laid down the groundwork. It was the government that funded these things in the first place, the
exactly.
innovations to get going. It was government grants that allowed a lot of this stuff to happen. It's utter nonsense, the garbage that gets spewed. And you know what? I don't think they're still listening because I make fun of them too much. But if there are any true Republicans listening, this is not what Jesus taught. You want to wrap yourself up in the papal flag, go for it. But Jesus taught never question the tax man. Give the tax man your last dime and live in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, I have, go away, you greedy bastard. It was
exactly
everyone.
And the Republican Party has.
It's all God's anyway, so who cares who has it? If you believe that everything you have is from God, maybe he's wanting to take some of it from you in the form of the government and see how much you hold on to it and how much you really are too wrapped up in your own material possessions.
I've always wondered when Jesus became a Republican. And, I mean, this is coming from a hardcore atheist here, but I love Jesus. I love everything he taught about the collective majority. The Republicans would see him as a communist. So I can kind of see how they dwarfed him into some sort of Republican body. But, I mean, you know, I live in a state with high taxes, really high taxes. But you see where it's going. Our Medicare system is incredible here. Our libraries are incredible. And if more people would take that into account, I think more people would be behind what the Republican Party loves to call socialism.
That was one of my favorite things that Glenn Beck said a few weeks ago. He said that, you know, he even taught himself. He wants nothing to do with socialism or anything to do with that. He even taught himself. He went to the library where the books are free. And I got to tell you, I just put my head in my hands and went, they're not free, you jackass. But facts don't matter.
Or for a free, cheap family outing, go to the park and have a picnic. Well, who bought that land and maintained it?
The problem is...
I took the Nolan test. There's a link to it off of Glenn Beck's website. He's been talking about to find out, are you a centrist, a conservative, a libertarian,
You're a communist, aren't you?
No, I'm a libertarian, according to the Nolan chart.
Well, a lot of Democrats are libertarians, and you're not a Democrat.
But, of course, there's a wide range. I'm kind of closer to, I'm like a libertarian, but closer to the centrist, and but on the conservative side of the libertarian thing. But, anyway.
Well, I think that what, you know, as we watch what unfolds this week, you know, those I want to take a moment to send my condolences out to Keith Olbermann. Those of you who have been following his show know that his father passed away over the weekend. He's been talking about that battle in healthcare that he's had and been really personalizing it in very much the same way that I did during my commentary on the healthcare situation back in August, and I think it is important to express our condolences. And Keith is someone who has means, but was able to have, and I've talked about this on the air, the end of life conversation with his dad that we all are going to have with our parents if we don't have already had them. I had to have it, and I talked about that back in August. You have this conversation, but is what Sarah Palin termed as death panels. And the reason I bring this up is forget the fact that Sarah Palin, it came out last week, was actually rendering rendered herself or availed herself of the quote-unquote socialist medicine available in Canada. She'd actually cross the border and go over there to get their medical care. Forget that, because Palin is basically a non-entity as far as I'm concerned in the political picture. She's fun to look at, and I don't mean that in a sexual way. I just mean she's I mean that in a train wreck kind of way. But she's not relevant in the big picture. However, the idea when she came up with the death panel thing, nothing encapsulates the idea that facts don't matter more than that did. When you have the GOP is now thumping their chests against the insurance pool of all the insurance companies in one pool, and you can choose from the insurance exchange, and you can choose from the insurance companies, they're the idiots that came up with this idea in the first place. You know, but now they're against it because the president supports it. Facts don't matter. And when you hear this argument come out, you need to understand what they're doing, and we need to be smarter than that. And if you're listening to the show, you should be calling your representative. Although, you know, I know that Limbaugh and the Ditto Heads and the people from Glenn Beckistan and all the other morons are trying to flood the people, the Congress's phones. You guys should be calling yourselves, you know, hoping and asking your congressman to stay put and stand fast. I have a feeling this is going to pass this week. I think when all is said and done, it's going to happen. But you know, I really, this has been a really fun ride for me for the past over a year now, and we're going to be taking a break for a few months, and I want to, you know. For those of you who've been following the show, you know that I've had a back injury that I need to tend to. And so I'm going to be taking some time off the next couple of months to actually tend to that back injury and get things better. We will be back on the air, all of us. It has been great, and I wanted to express that to you and say thank you and hats off to everyone who's been part of this. It's been fun, and we'll be back in a few months.
This has been Common Sense. On behalf of Janie, Jency, Natalie, Chris, Mike, myself, and the entire Common Sense crew, thank you for joining us. Episodes are available on demand via iTunes. For further information, visit the show's webpage at www.getcommonsenseradio.com. The Common Sense Radio Show would like to send a very special thank you to our engineer, Seth Hendrick, as well as our musical composer, Stephen Glossner. Until next week, stay safe, keep your head held high, and remember to always replace the spin with common sense. Take them home, Steve.